Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to today's podcast episode. In today's segment, we'll be talking with Anne-Marie Chunwich, the Director of Product Marketing at a leading crowdsourced cybersecurity firm known as Synnec. They are based in Silicon Valley out in California. Anne-Marie, thanks for joining me today. Let's go and get started.
Sounds good, Robbie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you once again. First, can you tell us a bit about your background and the career that also brought you to this company called Synnec?
Absolutely. So I started my career in the aerospace and defense industry, and as I'm sure you can imagine, in the aerospace and defense industry, we spend many years and resources building some of the most sophisticated systems in the world, sophisticated defense systems that we have to trust will uphold their part of the deal in protecting our citizens, our data, our networks. And what I saw there is that even though we would spend years developing these systems, oftentimes they could be taken down in less than a day by a malicious actor trying to attack them and access some of those data networks citizens. So I realized that the way that we were testing and conducting security testing specifically really wasn't effective in our modern environment where we're moving so quickly, where things are so dynamic. We needed a different approach and a way to do that. So when I met Synnec's founders, Jay Kaplan and Mark Kaur, I was really inspired by their idea. And Mark and Jay came out of the offensive side of cyber at the NSA, and they had an idea to provide the most rigorous, comprehensive security testing that you can find at scale. And the idea involves combining human intelligence from a crowd of top security talent, security researchers from dozens of countries around the world, and combining that with artificial intelligence or AI technology to get actionable results. And so that was 6 years ago that they started the company. And you know, today, Synnec and crowdsourced security testing is really becoming mainstream. What really inspired me about that idea is that security could be done more easily. It could be built in to these really sophisticated defense systems from the ground up and really be integrated into the DNA so that we don't have this mismatch anymore of investing so much time and effort in building systems all to be taken down by one attacker in a few hours.
Okay. Now, on the topic of trust, I mean, you have, I guess, this motto, trust to launch. On that topic, Synnec just released a report on trust in the past week. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Can you introduce us to the 2019 trust report to our audience? And why did Synnec feel this topic was relevant and what inspired it?
Sure. So for us, for Synnec, it's a crowdsourced penetration testing company. We work with CISOs across the Global 2000, government agencies, high-growth companies. And towards the end of the year in 2018, we started talking to our CISOs about what was going to be top of mind for them this year. And for all of them across the board, for ones that are looking for more effective, efficient security and security testing, trust was a priority for them. One of our CISOs, Ethan Steiger, the CISO at Domino's, said, "In 2019, more than ever, I need to prove to my board, to our executives, to customers, that they can trust our security is working and trust our brand." And it made us realize that security has really become an issue of trust, and the CISO is now moving into this role of protecting the brand. Yeah, now, what we found is trust takes time. It has to be built in by design, which I saw in my experience in the aerospace and defense industry, but it's something that has become now at the forefront of CISO's agendas, and we wanted to put a report together to make something as nebulous as trust much more actionable and to put numbers around it. So you'll see that a lot of our crowdsourced penetration testing data is introduced there.
Okay. Now, you began the report with the concept, unquote, trust has a number. It's an interesting one, but also not very intuitive because trust can be pretty abstract and intangible. Can you explain this concept in more detail, please?
Sure. So I think people can, when we talk about trust, people think of trust as a promise. And when consumers trust a brand, they trust that that brand will uphold that promise. But the difficulty is when you're on a security team or when you're in an organization, you want to be able to measure your progress towards that consistent delivery of the brand promise, and that's really hard to do. And so what we did is we approached it from that risk side, and we wanted to be able to say, how can we measure that security is reducing risk and upholding that brand promise? And in the words of another one of our CISOs, Steve Ward, who's now the CISO at Home Depot, to him he said, it's all about measurement. My success in getting to trust will be about being able to measure that my security is working and being able to report that out. And so for us, I made us realize, you know, trust really, in order for a security team to be successful, in order to get to trust, trust has to have a number. And that's something that we've worked really hard to be able to do, is to quantify that number from a hacker's perspective, from a very realistic perspective. So we invest a lot of time and resources there. And we've developed this report to talk about what a trust score would look like. And it includes a combination of things, you know, the size of a company, the breaches, the responsiveness. But in this report, the first in this series, we started at the asset level, at digital assets level, again, trying to take that approach of looking from the ground up at an organization. And at that lowest level, what is the attacker resistance score, a piece of the overall trust score?
Okay. That sounds excellent. Now, can you tell me more about the CINAHC attacker resistance score?
Sure. So, you know, like I mentioned, it's a piece of an overall trust score, and it measures an asset's realistic ability to withstand attack from our hacker's perspective. So, like I mentioned, CINAHC being a crowdsourced penetration testing company, we have a crowd of top security researchers in the world that conduct penetration testing through our platform, enabled by our technology. And by doing that, we gather all of the data that they're doing, and we're able to aggregate that to get a very realistic sense for how hardened an asset is against attack. So it's based on data rather than hypotheses, and all the more powerful as a result. So it has three components: attacker cost, severity of findings, and remediation. So with attacker cost, we're trying to measure how hard is it for an attacker to find a vulnerability? What is the cost to the attacker? The next part, severity of findings, aims to measure the quantity and the quality of the types of vulnerabilities that are being found in an asset. And then the third part, remediation efficiency, looks at how responsive an organization is to those findings and how quickly they patch them, so that overall we're able to say, at the asset level, this is how hard your assets are against attack, and then we're able to roll that up to the organization level to say, as an organization looking across your digital assets, this is how resistant you are to attackers. And that piece there is so core to trust, because it's on security and on our assets that we build products, businesses, brands. And so if you're not secure at that foundational asset level, it will be very difficult to build sustainable trust.
Okay. What were some of your key findings in this report?
Sure. So the data in this report is based on thousands of crowdsourced pen tests across hundreds of organizations, 9 different industries, and there were a few main takeaways. The first was that, you know, across the board, across our 9 industries that we looked at, manufacturing and critical infrastructure, as well as financial services, really stood out as top performers. They've been very much ahead of the pack, very proactive to build that attacker resistance and to build trust. The second is that security teams are making progress, and I think that's a really important thing to call out, because I don't think we give security teams enough credit. They're often working in the background, and we don't really shine a light on them unless there's a breach, at least in the public or in the media. And so one thing that we did want to call out is that we are seeing that attacker resistance scores are improving over time. In fact, those organizations that have been conducting good security practices, testing regularly, using crowdsourced security testing, they have up to 200% higher ARS scores if they've been doing it for over 2 years relative to those that have only been practicing that good security hygiene for less than a year. And then the third point is that, you know, building trust and improving those scores requires a continuous commitment to improving security, and part of that is testing regularly looking forward, embracing vulnerabilities, and then working very quickly to remediate them. And those that took that continuous approach saw 43% higher scores on average than those that test on a point-in-time basis.
Excellent. So manufacturing and the critical infrastructure, as well as financial services, were found to be the most trusted industries by CYNEC. Why do you think that is?
I would say a few reasons. The first is that both are huge targets, you know, for different reasons. So within manufacturing and critical infrastructure, of course, there's a lot of IP there that's very interesting to malicious actors. On the financial services side, you know, cybercrime is a huge motivator for those malicious actors. And so, of course, there's a lot at stake in terms of financial assets within that industry. So for both, I think they've had to be very proactive in order to defend their core IP, their core assets from attack. The other thing is I think regulation helps. They're both heavily regulated industries. Financial services has a lot is required to uphold a very high level of compliance standards. And so I do think that it has helped move the ball forward for security. And finally, they've been very responsive. So within financial services, I mean, we called this out in our findings, but they've seen a decrease in authorization permission vulnerabilities. And they've been doing this by increasing the number of controls on authentication and authorization to really make it harder to increase that attacker cost and to reduce the severity of their findings. So they've been very proactive.
Excellent. Now, what were some of the industries towards the bottom of the list, and why do you think they had such lower trust scores?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I would start out by saying that we encourage all of our clients to really be rigorous in their testing, to really look for vulnerabilities and to embrace them, because that's how we will get more secure. If you don't know that you have a problem, you can't fix it. So that's number one. I would just like to say that anyone who is lower in the list, it's definitely all of our organizations improve over time. And so security isn't really something where we can stick our heads in the ground, right? We have to embrace that. That being said, I would say, for example, state and local, which falls farther down on the list, is a big target. You know, they've been in the news a lot over the past few years as being a target, especially within elections and around election security. And e-commerce is also a very dynamic industry. So there's a lot of change. They're under a lot of pressure to push out new code, to push out new releases. And so I think because of that, there, with all new code, there will be new vulnerabilities. So I would, you know, caution anyone who's looking at the list to think of those lower down as people that are at least being very aggressive in their testing and finding vulnerabilities. But over time, I'm looking forward to seeing what the 2020 report says, because I imagine that we'll see a lot of progress in those scores by then.
Okay. Now, what are the building blocks of trust?
So they really align with some of the things we've been talking about. I mean, the first is increasing the cost of attack, making it really difficult for an attacker to do damage to your digital assets, to do damage to your brand, making it not worth their time. You know, recently we had a conversation with a few different experts in the field, and David Cohen, the former chief administrative officer at Clear, made a great point. He said that there are economics behind trust. There are economic incentives. And so we have to incentivize our companies, organizations, teams to prioritize trust, and to also discourage others from trying to damage it in some way. And that starts at the asset level. The second building block is really trying to keep the severity of our vulnerabilities to a minimum by embedding very tightly in the product process. You know, I mentioned a couple minutes ago that those trustworthy companies are building trust into the DNA of those organizations. They're building trust by design by starting at the asset level. They're really prioritizing their security teams, making sure that they're enabled to support the product teams so that secure products are being built. And then businesses are being built around those secure products, and then strong brands are being built around those businesses. So by embedding security into those teams, by being very responsive to vulnerabilities that are discovered, we can keep that severity of findings to a minimum. And then the third piece is remediating efficiently and with discipline. Like I mentioned, trust has to be practiced. It has to be something that becomes a part of our DNA. And so when we find a problem, fixing it will really go a long way in making sure that we uphold trust with our consumers and showing them that this is a priority.
Okay. You say that trust takes time. What do you mean by that, and how can this help security teams moving forward into the future?
Well, trust has to be built. You know, it's not something that can be declared. It's something that has to be demonstrated. And we need an agile approach to building trust. You know, in the aerospace and defense example, sophisticated defense systems take years to build. It's almost, in developers' terms, like a waterfall approach to development. But trust has to be an agile approach, something where we're building trust in sprints across, you know, all levels of an organization, not just building in trust at the end and trying to slap a good brand on something. A brand has to be built and a promise has to be built over time. And I think consumers will see that. They'll see the commitment to the brand. So by layering in trust at all those different levels, we can really build something that's much more sustainable. And so security teams that embed with their development teams will really see results in terms of their speed and effectiveness, but it won't happen overnight. So like I mentioned, one of the key findings was that over a couple of years, we saw organizations see up to 200% improvement in their trust scores, but it did take a couple of years.
Okay. You also say that continuous testing produces 43% higher trust scores than point-in-time testing. This is probably not surprising, but how many organizations do you think still use point-in-time security testing? Why isn't everyone testing on a continual basis?
It's a great question. You know, point-in-time testing has really been the standard for many years, and a lot of that has been driven by regulation. You know, requiring companies to report out on an annual basis or quarterly basis on an audit or, you know, a compliance checklist. That being said, that regulation is really at a juncture where it's going to have to change because our digital environments are too dynamic for that. We're not just pushing out new releases on a quarterly or annual basis. We're doing it on a weekly basis. So from that perspective, I think the testing cadence will change, and SYNNEC, as a company, has really been an advocate for that continuous approach, and you'll see in terms of our news from this year, we're making a lot of strides to move the standard of testing to a continuous model.
Okay. Can you explain the data science behind your findings? What was your data set, and how do you find tangible ways to measure that trust?
Sure. There's a big data science team and a lot of big brains behind the trust score. You know, we have a patented model that's pretty sophisticated, but in terms of the data, we use a few different data sources. We use data from our crowd of security researchers, the SYNNEC Red Team, from our aggregated vulnerability findings, from trends that we see in remediation. And so, you know, having that crowdsourced approach affords us the luxury of getting a lot of insights. And the platform that it's all done through has its own intelligence component. So because it's AI-enabled, it's learning from all the testing that's going on and able to capture a lot of that data. So we have the luxury of a lot of data being piped in through all the testing that we do, and then our data science team is able to model out what would a realistic assessment be of this asset all the way through the organization's ability to resist attack.
Okay. It looks like you have a lot of contributors comment on this report as well. For example, Amit Lazari, a well-known advocate for Safe Harbor, the bug bounty programs, CISOs from Home Depot and Just Eat, David Damaris and Jeff Hancock from Stanford. How does trust resonate for them, and why do they care so much to speak about it?
Trust is really universal. I mean, this came up in conversations with all of these contributors. I mean, everyone understands the importance of trust to business success, to relationship success. So it was really, you know, an easy sell to get people involved in this because it's something that we all understand the importance of, but we all struggle to quantify or to really make practical. And knowing that it's a priority for CISOs, it's something that we all have to make an effort to put into practice. So, you know, from a security team's perspective, it's important to have a trusted relationship with the product team. It's important to have a trusted relationship with the security community. Members of the ethical hacking community, the security researcher community, they want to be able to trust as well that when they engage with a company, their findings are going to be acted upon and that they're going to be engaged with in a professional way. For companies, they want to build trust with their customers. For regulators, they want to be able to set up policies to protect those relationships, to protect consumers. And I think trust is something that we all know the feeling of we all want to be able to trust in the business and our relationships every day. So it really is something universal that we were very glad to be able to dig into a bit deeper through this report.
Okay. Now, in the report, you recognize the CISO as a brand protector in today's companies. Why is it not the CMO, and how do you think CISOs and CMOs feel about this shift?
Sure. The CMO remains the owner of the brand. CMO, and being on the marketing organization myself, I know, you know, what a big task that is. So that role is not diminishing in any way. However, the CISO is really becoming a close ally of the CMO by becoming a guardian of the brand and a guardian of trust. They're an important stakeholder in the brand now. In fact, we recognize this with our first annual Guardians of Trust Awards this year at the RSA conference. We're pleased to be able to recognize CISOs like Dave Sheridan from Santander UK and Ethan Steiger from Domino's that have really, you know, taken that role seriously and have been at the forefront of building and defending their brands. So I think it will be a really interesting journey for the CISO and the CMO as they really develop this relationship around the brand.
Okay. Now, in your data gathering research, did any commonalities between companies with high trust scores or low trust scores?
The trust score is dynamic, so it can always change. And so, you know, one commonality is that the score can always go down. In security, you can never really eliminate risk, as we all know, but you can always try to mitigate that, and there's always room for improvement in such a dynamic environment. So, you know, the top performers, you know, one thing I will say, the top performers really embrace the vulnerabilities and the findings that they have. They really take that seriously. They move quickly. They're not trying to, you know, hide from those potential issues. So they're really going out and seeking out where could there be risk to our brand, what poses risk to the trust that we've built, and trying to patch that up and remediate as fast as possible.
Okay. It seems like that Synec has a lot of vulnerability data. Is there anything interesting you're finding about vulnerability types or the severity of these vulnerabilities?
It comes back to, you know, trust takes time, and I think over time we're seeing great improvement across the test, especially when we continue to test the same asset or the same organization. There's a lot of learning being done, and so being able to harness insights from tests is so important because it does make the organization stronger. So overall, we are seeing an overall decline in severity, about 4% over the past couple of years. This has really been led by tech, which was a big driver of that decline, a little bit higher than average, around 9%, helping to reduce the severity of findings. And being able to take these findings and pipe it back into the National Vulnerability Database, we've seen a similar decline at the national level as well.
Okay. Remediation time is a component of an organization's trust score. What have you found about remediation times, and what's the standard?
In general, the majority of vulnerabilities in our database are remediated under 3 months. So that's good. You know, some were started to trend a little bit higher. I think under 3 months is good. I mean, ideally, it would happen immediately. But the reality is that, you know, we're all resource constrained, right? And the more changes, the more vulnerabilities are, it's hard to remediate quickly. And so scale is such a critical component of security team success. But overall, we saw that most vulnerabilities were remediated under 3 months. And not surprisingly, manufacturing and critical infrastructure averaged about 57% faster. So big contributor to their success.
Okay. Can you dive deeper into your recommendations in the report for how organizations can improve trust?
Sure. We had 5 main takeaways. The first is that security is core to the brand. We've talked a lot about that. So it's something that should be prioritized and should be thought about at the highest levels of the business. If you don't have a strong foundation within security, it's going to be hard to build a sustainable brand and sustain trust with customers. The second is that an outsider perspective is so important for security and for trust. You know, if you grade your own test, you're always going to give yourself an A. So bringing in an outsider to look for potential risks to the brand, to look for potential security risks, really goes a long way in getting that realistic perspective on where your security stands. So that's one of the main motivators behind getting that crowdsourced approach. The third is adopting a continuous approach to security and to brand building. But you know, security and brand building, trust building efforts can't be point in time. They have to be agile and integrated into the day-to-day lifestyle of an organization. The fourth is that finding vulnerabilities is a step in the right direction, but you can't stop there. You have to fix as well. You have to go the extra step to close the loop. And having that closed loop will really strengthen the organization overall, make it healthier. And finally, building a security ecosystem will be critical for the longevity of a brand and for a business. That means making security a priority, investing in your talent, and making it something that you're proud of, and telling your customers about how much you invest in security, how seriously you take their privacy, their data security, and how that trickles down into the investments that you make at a product level. So those are the five big takeaways.
Sounds excellent. Now, I saw that you also wrote a blog recently called or about building trust by design. What do you mean by that?
And trust by design really comes down to this agile approach. So not relying on security as an afterthought, not relying on building trust as an afterthought, but really making it something that remains at the forefront of everything that an organization does and remains a priority throughout a development lifecycle. So by design, has often been used in other contexts, but trust by design is a new idea of how teams, and I'm going back to Ethan now, thinking about how trust is a priority for them, and Steve Ward saying that it has to be measured. By building it into all that we do, keeping trust at the forefront of that, we can make it a priority. If we set metrics for ourselves, if we set goals for ourselves, and we build it in, organizations will get to trust.
So Synec is a crowdsourced security testing platform. Can you please explain this model in more detail?
Sure. I've touched on it a little bit, but to give you a better sense, the organizations that we work with, they see a problem. Because on the one hand, they can't hire enough talent internally. We just don't have enough cybersecurity talent in the world. You may have heard the statistic that we're facing 3.5 million unfilled cyber positions by 2021. And so as talented and creative as humans are, there just aren't enough of them to meet the need of security teams. There's too much demand. On the flip side, machines are very scalable, but they're less creative. In fact, we find 80 to 90% of what a machine, 80 to 90% of what we find with humans wouldn't be found by a machine. So the realization there is that the most effective model for delivering security at scale is through a human and machine approach. And that's the approach we take at Synec. So we pair a crowd of the world's top security researchers with AI technology to provide the most comprehensive pen test you can find with actionable results. We do all this through a platform that provides constant insight to the end user, visibility and control, all in a managed way so that we can easily scale security teams and also provide them the insight they need to get more secure and get to trust a little bit faster.
Okay. Now, finally, as you wrap up the show here, does crowdsourced security get an organization closer to being trusted by the industry, by their customers?
Our customers have certainly found that. Having the rigor of an outside perspective as well as the scale of a crowd with AI technology gives them insight, speed, responsiveness that they haven't been able to get before, and certainly not internally. Just internally, we don't have the resources. That's why that crowdsourced distributed approach makes so much sense, and it gives them that agility to build in security and trust by design.
Well, Anne-Marie, we thank you very much for your time this evening, and we look hopefully forward to speaking to you again here in the near future.
Thank you so much, Robbie.
Take care.